Albert Einstein once said, "If you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it yourself." Sometimes technology makes us feel like six-year-olds, especially when hackers try to use the internet to steal something from each of us. If you think you have nothing of value to a hacker, think again. You and everyone you know are exactly who hackers target every day. This is DIY Cyber Guy with David W. Schroefer. Every week, he will show you how cybersecurity can be as easy as locking up your house at night. Now, here is your host, David W. Schroefer.
Welcome, everybody, to DIY Cyber Guy. We've got an action-packed show for you today. We've got issues in just about every corner of computing, cyber and otherwise. So first and foremost, it is still a terrible time to buy a new computer. There are issues with the manufacturers of these CPUs or chips, central processing units, that sit at the core of your laptop or desktop or whatever computer that you use. So if you can avoid buying a new computer, we'll tell you exactly why you should avoid buying a new computer right now until some of this stuff gets sorted out. Microsoft pulls back an update. Their March 13th update was full of flaws, and we'll tell you all about what those flaws were and how to make sure you protect yourself against these issues and future issues from Microsoft updates. Apple is continuing to give their $29 offer for a brand new battery for many of their phones. We'll tell you why they're doing that, remind you about the issue, but also it's running out. So we'll tell you exactly when it expires and what you can do to take advantage of a pretty good offer, $29 for a new lithium ion battery installed on a mobile device. That's pretty good. So we'll tell you all about that. There is an HP computer hack that is continuing. It's been going on for a few months, but it's been updated in the last few weeks from HP. And it's basically a great way that hackers can attack your whole network, not just your printer. So if you have an HP printer, this is a hair on fire 5 out of 5 that you really want to pay attention to. And finally, we've got an issue with vape sticks. You heard me right. If you use a vape stick, they're actually being used to spread malware. So no corner is safe in the world of cybersecurity. So let's jump right in. It's still a terrible time to buy a new computer. So again, this is a hair on fire 5 out of 5. If you are thinking about buying a new computer now, it's important that you, if you can wait, then you wait until some of these issues have been sorted out. Because we're not actually sure that every chip manufacturer is going to be able to sort out the issues that are happening in the world of computers right now. And so let me tell you about that. Intel is one example. AMD is another. So Intel, I've talked about a number of times in the past few weeks. They've been working hard to fix the Spectre. They've essentially fixed the Meltdown vulnerability, but the Spectre, specifically the Spectre Variant 2 vulnerability, is turning out to be a lot more tricky than originally thought. And you can listen to my previous episode regarding Spectre and Meltdown for a good description of what those issues are. But fundamentally, it has to do with how computer chips cheat. They run programs or parts of the program that are not being asked for yet, because they get ahead of themselves so they can basically operate faster. And while they're running commands and they're solving problems that are not being asked of them yet, that information is stored in a side channel, in a cache, or think of it as a separate bucket of information that can contain anything. It can contain passwords and credit card numbers. Anything at all can be stored in one of these side channels or one of these caches, and those caches can be exploited. Now, the good news is, again, they have not been exploited yet. There haven't been real hacks out there, but they exist, and these companies are trying to fix them. So, unfortunately, Intel's first attempt to fix was a hard fail. Windows had to roll it back. Apple, thankfully, hadn't rolled it out at the point in time that it was discovered that it was full of flaws, but Intel was not able to fix the vulnerabilities successfully. In fact, their fix caused as many problems as it solved back in January. They had another fix. Intel had a second fix in February that Windows just rolled out on March 13th, and that is having problems too. So I'm going to talk about that later in the episode about Windows, why Windows had to roll back their March 13th update and exactly what that means and what the issues were. And we'll get to that later in the show. So Intel is having problems. Now, we're all in the cybersecurity business. We're all fairly confident that Intel is going to figure this out, but we don't know for sure because, you know, as I mentioned before, this issue deep inside the chips is governed by, you know, the way these chips cheat. It's governed by a thing called microcode. It's code that's written in and programmed in the chip itself, and it tells the chip how to run all these side channel commands and how to get ahead of itself if it has the opportunity to save a little time by getting ahead of the program and running information that hasn't been asked yet and storing it separately. That's all very complex and governed by this this concept called microcode. Now, it's not an easy fix to change this microcode. In fact, to run some of these fixes is actually going against the way the chip is designed itself. So my fundamental concern here is, in some of these cases, it's still possible that the chip itself may need to be redesigned, which is a multi-year process to design and test and then roll out. And then these, you know, once they're rolled out, then they just get installed into other machines like, you know, Apple boxes and Apple laptops and Dell laptops, et cetera. And that's when you can buy it as a consumer. So it takes years to run this whole process through. And we don't know exactly what the extent of the issue is yet until we see a successful fix. And Intel, unfortunately, we're not sure that we've seen a successful fix from them for these Spectre vulnerabilities, or specifically the Spectre variant 2 vulnerability. And more recently, another chip manufacturer, AMD, had a huge vulnerability exposed. And this is kind of a weird story. So typically in the world of cybersecurity, you have researchers that are looking for problems. That's a big part of what they do. And if they find a problem, they go through a process called responsible disclosure. They contact the company that has the problem and they explain the problem. Now, often they give examples of the problem, clearly detail exactly what it is and prove that it exists out there. And then they wait. The researcher will typically wait about 90 days, maybe sometimes even a little bit more, to give the software company a chance to fix some of these things. And then whether the company fixes the problem or not within that 90-day period, the researcher will expose it to the public. And the reason that they do that is, one, the hackers may have already figured it out and could be exploiting the vulnerability. And two, it's really a reasonable amount of time for a company to patch a vulnerability or at least address it in the marketplace and say, yeah, we understand that vulnerability exists, but you know, it's part of our design, or we can fix it, or we recommend, you know, doing X, Y, and Z to keep the risk to a minimum. That's how it works. Find a problem, give the company 90 days, maybe even a little bit more to fix the problem, and then disclose it to the public. In this case, a research firm found an issue, pretty significant issue, with some AMD chips. They gave AMD 1 day, 24 hours before they disclosed it to the public. Now, a chip manufacturer can't really reasonably react to anything in 24 hours. Even 90 days would have been a challenge for a chip manufacturer to isolate a problem, create a fix for the problem, and push out the remediation or the new code that would fix the problem, because chip manufacturers don't necessarily send the new instructions directly to a computer. They have to send it to Windows or to Apple, and then Apple integrates it into their machines, or in some cases the actual manufacturer of the hardware itself will send out the update to the firmware. So it takes a long time. Even 90 days would have been a bit of a stretch. But in this case, the company gave them 1 day, and they tried to defend that 1 day disclosure, but there was really not enough time for AMD to do anything at all. So on March 12th, the researchers found the issue, and on March 13th, it was released to the public. So here's a snapshot of exactly what they discovered. So first of all, the model computers that are affected are the are two chipsets within AMD. One is called Ryzen, and that's R-Y-Z-E-N. The other is called EPYC, E-P-Y-C. And there's a fantastic article in Hacker News, and I included the article in the show notes that can take you step-by-step through exactly what the issue is and exactly what the problems are. But there are basically 13 flaws, and they're similar to the Spectre Meltdown vulnerabilities that we've been talking about. And all of the vulnerabilities reside in AMD's Zen architecture processors and chipsets, and they are pretty significant. Fundamentally, the team of researchers in the Israeli-based CTS labs, like I said, found the issue, and they found two exploitable manufacturer backdoors in the chipset that could allow attackers to inject malicious code inside the chip. Now, we often refer to things like as bad as it gets in terms of exploits within the hacker world. But if you're able to inject malicious code into the chip itself and make the chip do anything you want it to do, you've got a pretty big vulnerability. The attacker can do almost anything they want to the chip itself. And again, making it all the more likely that the researcher was not making a good decision by giving AMD only 24 hours to fix these kind of issues. So the article goes on to talk about the fallout and the vulnerability of these potential attacks, but it is really significant. So I encourage you to go to Hacker News. You can also Google AMD processor vulnerabilities Hacker News, and you can find what I consider to be the best article on the topic. But there are a number of different ways that an attacker can take actual control of a computer with an AMD chip inside. And you may not even know that you're running a computer or you're using a computer that has an AMD chip, either an EPYC chip or a Ryzen chip inside the device. But it's something that is creating a lot of concern in the marketplace, and AMD is doing everything that they can to fix it. There is not a fix yet as of the recording of the show, and we expect to stay on top of this issue in the coming days and weeks. But again, fundamentally, if you're thinking about buying a new computer, don't, because now we have two mammoth chip manufacturing companies between Intel and AMD, and we simply don't know the extent of these issues and these fixes. Now, the AMD issue is different from the Intel issue, and we believe that both of these companies will be able to fix these vulnerabilities once and for all, but they haven't yet, and until they do, you gotta assume that the possibility exists that they won't be able to without a chip redesign in some of these cases, which is significant. Okay, so we will be right back with more DIY Cyber Guy. We're going to cover the Microsoft Windows rollback of their latest update from March 13th right after this. We'll be right back.
Anchor ID is a new way to log into websites and mobile apps, all without a password. The key is your smartphone, literally. Your smartphone is the key that will replace the need for passwords to your online sites. Our next product will be available to Salesforce.com users soon. To sign up for the first year free, just go to anchorid.com/Salesforce. Visit anchorid.com/Salesforce and get your first year free. You are listening to DIY Cyber Guy with David W. Schroefer. If you have a question for David, please send it to questions@DIYCyberGuy.com. That's questions@DIYCyberGuy.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to DIY Cyber Guy. Our next story is about Microsoft and their March 13th update. Now, if you listened to the show last week, you probably heard me say, don't run the update if you can possibly avoid it. And I'm repeating that advice now. So this is a hair on fire 5 out of 5. And the urgency is really what not to do. Don't run the Windows update from March 13th if you haven't already, because Microsoft is dialing it back which is the risk that we were worried about when we talked about it last week. So the advice continues to be run your system backups. And actually, it's probably about time for us to do an episode on that. So stay tuned and we'll talk about how to do system backups in an upcoming episode. But if you have a system backup in place, run it and make sure that it's current. Now, I want to be clear. A system backup is very, very different from simply backing up a few of your files. You can copy and paste a bunch of Microsoft Word files or Office files or any kind of files into a USB drive, or perhaps you're using Google Docs and you're confident that all your files are safe on Google Cloud. That's great, or out on Google Drive. That's great. That protects your files, but it does not protect your system, your actual laptop. So if you're using a Windows computer of any kind, you really need to be aware of the system backup and the problems that it's making. So looking at the official Microsoft website, here are the improvements that they talk about in the March 13th update. And I'm quoting, this security update includes quality improvements. No new operating system features are being introduced in this update. Okay, that's good. Quality improvements are always a welcome thing. Key changes include cumulative Spectre and Meltdown protections for 32-bit and 64-bit versions of Windows. Okay, super. We've been talking about Spectre and Meltdown really since January 1st, since these vulnerabilities were made public. By the way, we still don't have examples in the wild, as they say, of actual hackers exploiting these vulnerabilities. We have a lot of cases of companies trying to fix these vulnerabilities before they're hacked, and this is one of them. So this update from March 13th from Windows, from Microsoft Windows, is trying to protect against Spectre and Meltdown. So that part's good. This update also includes security updates to Microsoft graphics components, Windows kernel, Windows shell, Windows MSXML, Windows installer, and Windows Hyper-V. Okay, Windows kernel, that refers to the core of the software. That is requires the highest level of privileges to get to. So whenever you see that Windows is updating that, they're really updating the most sensitive part of the software that runs your laptop. So those are the improvements they talk about, which is great. Here is where this turns into, you know, one of those pharmacy ads where the symptom list is so long that you couldn't imagine why anybody would ever use the drug. This is very much the same thing. So these are the symptoms that people are experiencing according to Microsoft. This isn't coming from some third-party site. Microsoft themselves are disclosing some of the issues that they've become aware of. So symptom number one, servers may leak memory. Okay, if you're familiar with Spectre and Meltdown or you've been listening to the show, that's the problem, is that these vulnerabilities can leak memory. And leaking memory is profoundly bad because the memory could be anything. It could be passwords. It could be credit cards that you're putting into your computer. It could be sensitive information on your computer. It can be anything. And the workaround listed for this symptom on the Microsoft website is we're working on it. That's really all they have to say. Microsoft is working on a resolution and will provide an update in an upcoming release. That means they haven't fixed it yet. They haven't released the fix yet, and the problem is going to continue. That's pretty bad. So right away, the very problem they were trying to fix with the update is present in the update itself. And they don't talk about exactly, is it the same kind of memory leak that Spectre and Meltdown could create, or is it something entirely new? Regardless, it's a problem. Don't run the update if you possibly can avoid it. The list continues with other symptoms. A stop error. Microsoft says a stop error occurs if this update is applied to 32-bit machines with a PAE mode disabled. Okay, if you don't know what a PAE mode is, then you probably have not disabled it and it's not going to affect you. But the stop error, that's code for your computer crashes. It locks up. We used to call it the blue screen of death. It's not always blue anymore. It can simply stop working or some other error can come up, but it's dead. You basically have to do a hard reboot to get it to work again at all, if it comes up at all. Another stop error, another hard crash on machines that don't support streaming instructions from multiple data extensions. Okay. Again, if you haven't enabled that, you probably don't have that to worry about. But here's something you do have to worry about. If you use antivirus software, now, antivirus software can be something that Microsoft included in Microsoft Windows, or it can be something that you bought from a third party like McAfee or some of the other vendors. So this fix, according to Microsoft, only applies to antivirus vendors that have allowed something called RegKey, R-E-G-K-E-Y. So if your vendor has allowed RegKey, then the update will not create a problem in your computer. If it doesn't, it'll either bypass it altogether or it could cause an issue with your machine, with your Windows machine. So all kinds of issues with this one. Now, on the Microsoft website, and again, I've got the link to that in my show notes, they have a lot of very complicated workarounds where you can install your own key, you can create basically some manual workarounds within your machine if you're at all inclined to do that, or you could just really do everything you could to skip the update if you haven't run it already, or even if you do have a good system backup, like I strongly recommend, then you can go back to an earlier version of your entire system and save yourself some headaches. So, you know, these are some profoundly bad things. Here's another one in the symptom list. If you have a new Ethernet virtual network interface card, also known as a VNIC, a new virtual network interface card may be created with a default setting in place of the previous existing VNIC. So if you use a VNIC, this new update might just replace it with something that's not the thing you set up, which is going to cause some problems. And here's the last one. If you've ever manipulated your IP address, and there are reasons to do that, lots of them for security reasons or for perhaps you use the laptop at work, et cetera, and somebody went into your computer and changed your IP address for you. Hopefully that was a work admin or a system admin from your office or something. But if you ever had a reason to change your IP address, this Microsoft update is going to dial that IP address update back. It's going to remove it. The IP address settings are completely lost after applying the update. They all go back to the default. And in terms of a workaround for Microsoft, all they have to say is, again, Microsoft is working on a resolution and will provide an update in an upcoming release. So if any of those things apply to you, then you really want to avoid this update if you haven't already. So those are the crash errors, the memory leaks as a possibility. This is not as bad as it gets. You could actually have a worse update than Microsoft has in the past, but these are a lot of reasons to run away screaming from the March 13th update from Microsoft Windows. Now, as you can imagine, Microsoft downgraded this update for Windows 7, at least, from critical to important. That matters because it's no longer automatic. You would have to manually go to the update catalog, which I strongly recommend you don't do in this case, if you wanted to run the update. Okay, so I do have a link in the show notes, like I said, that will take you right to the page that I have been referring to. And I've got a variety of other leaks from TechNet, the TechNet page within Microsoft, and some other support pages that will talk about your specific systems and all the other issues that are going on with this March 13th update. So again, don't run the update. Run your backups, system backups, wherever you can. And yes, I will have an upcoming show that focuses in on system backups and how to do them easily and without spending too much money. Next up, Apple's iPhone battery replacement offer. So last year, a number of you may have heard that Microsoft was slowing down your computers, or rather your iPhones. And they were. And that was something that they were doing intentionally. And when they were called on it, when it was discovered what one of their updates, and they did this through an update. They pushed an update that actually made phones work more slowly. Now, the criticism, of course, was that Apple was doing that to promote the new phones that they had in the marketplace, meaning that you would throw away your old iPhone 6 because it was working so slowly and replace it with something more current like an iPhone 8 or an iPhone 10. Apple said something different. They said, well, we weren't doing it for that reason. We were doing it because we wanted to mitigate the problem of battery life. Battery life in a lithium-ion battery slows down. So I'll talk more about that in a second. But first, here's how to qualify for this offer. So the way that they fixed it is offering a $29 replacement on a lithium-ion battery, even if the phone was out of warranty. If it's in warranty, the replacement is $0. But if you have one of the qualifying phones, and I'll talk about that in a second, then it's only $29 to fix it. So how do you qualify for that? Again, first and foremost, your phone is out of warranty. And it applies to these models, and I'll read the entire list. The iPhone SE, the iPhone 6, iPhone 6 Plus, iPhone 6S, iPhone 6S Plus, iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus, iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, and the iPhone 10. Now, it's important to mention that your phone cannot be damaged. Damage can actually prevent Apple's ability or a service provider's ability to replace the battery itself if it's dented, if there's other damage inside. So the phone has to work and it has to be undamaged when you give it to the service provider. And it's available to all users. You may have heard in the news or rumors about the nature of the battery itself. If the battery was already dying or was halfway or less than 80% of its original life, then they would honor the $29 offer. That's not true. It applies to anybody that has a phone that I just read off the list that's out of warranty and is not damaged. So why are they doing this? So lithium-ion batteries discharge more quickly depending on their age and depending on how they're used. Now, old phones may have a battery life that's so short that they actually become difficult to use. You're constantly recharging them, and that affects your ability to, you know, say, leave the house in the morning and rely on the phone all day. You have to charge it during the day before you're able to easily recharge it again overnight. That becomes a major problem in terms of how people use these phones, especially if it's one of the older phones. So again, Apple actually slowed down the older phones in late 17, but they apologized, and that's important to note. They reversed the update, so that slowdown, that intentional slowdown, has been removed. And of course, they're offering this $29 replacement for these phones. So how do you get a replacement? I recommend you just go to Google and search the terms, three words, iPhone, repair, and battery. Again, that's Google search terms, iPhone, repair, and battery. Search those three terms and you're going to see a site that's the official Apple support site. And the URL is long, so I'm not going to read it, but it's entitled iPhone Battery and Power Official Apple Support. That will be your first hit. And that's exactly the link that you need. And of course, in the show notes at DIYCyberGuy.com, I've got the entire link that all you need to do is click it, and it'll take you directly to the page. So wait times are an issue. Obviously, there are a lot of people out there with iPhones, and this is a fair and pretty decent offer. Typically, phones are a lot more expensive to replace. It's a lot more expensive to replace a battery than $29. It can be $79. It can even be more than that when you add in service and the part itself. So in some cases, the wait has been as long as 4 to 6 weeks. In a few cases, it's been even longer than that. But those wait times are getting shorter. There are reports of some wait times being only 2 weeks for some model. So the important part is to call your Apple support center first. How do you find the support center? Well, again, search those Google terms that I gave you, iPhone repair and battery, and it'll take you to the support website at Apple that will walk you through exactly how to do that. Now, remember that Apple is expiring this offer. This is temporary. The good news is it's going to last through December 31st of 2018. So you've got several months to take advantage of the offer for your out-of-warranty battery service for this $29, fee, which is, you know, more than reasonable, but just don't forget about it. So that's why I'm giving this a hair on fire 1 out of 5. It's not urgent. You shouldn't run out and do this second. But if you have one of the phones that I listed, it's really a good idea to just get that battery replaced so you don't have to think about it. And one more time, the list of phones are iPhone SE, iPhone 6, 6 Plus, and 6S. Sorry, let me say that again. iPhone 6, iPhone 6 Plus, iPhone 6S, iPhone 6S Plus, iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus, iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, and even the iPhone 10. Now, in reality, most of the iPhone 8s and iPhone 10s are still in warranty as of this the airing of this show. But regardless, if you have the opportunity, I would definitely take them up on it. So get your $29 battery from Apple if you possibly can. No, Apple is not a sponsor or anything like that. I just think this is a smart thing to do if you have an iPhone. Hopefully some of the other handset manufacturers will follow suit. And hang in there. We will be right back after this short
Anchor
break.
Anchor ID so is a new way to log into websites and mobile apps, all without a password. The key is your smartphone. Literally. Your smartphone is the key that will replace the need for passwords to your online sites. Our next product will be available to Salesforce.com users soon. To sign up for the first year free, just go to anchorid.com/Salesforce. Visit anchorid.com/Salesforce and get your first year free. You are listening to DIY Cyber Guy with David W. Schroefer. If you have a question for David, please send it to questions@DIYCyberGuy.com. That's questions@DIYCyberGuy.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to DIY Cyber Guy. We've got a few more stories for you that you'll find either interesting or terrifying. If you use an HP printer of any kind, and I mean any kind of HP printer, this is a hair on fire 5 out of 5 for you. And the short answer is you've got to run updates automatically. The biggest problem is a lot of these computers are set to default not update their software or their firmware automatically. You have to do that manually. So you've got to run those updates automatically, and I'm going to tell you why. So there's a vulnerability summary on you can find right on HP's website. I've got the link in the show notes, but if you search the letter C05462914, you will and also the term HP, you will find the security exploit. So the problem is that hackers have found a way to use a security vulnerability to run code not on your printer, but in your network and on your computers. It's called arbitrary code execution or remote code execution. That's as bad as it gets. That means that a hacker can use your printer's vulnerabilities to get information or get code in behind your network and then infect potentially the computers that are on your network. That's profoundly bad. Most people think about, well, my printer is my printer. If somebody hacks it, what's the worst they can do? They can print up a menu that I don't want to see. That's not the case. This is a lot more insidious than that. The hackers are using it to get behind the firewall of your network and into your system that can cause almost any kind of damage. And this is current, by the way. It was first discovered last year under the malware code CVE-2017-2741. Again, you can Google that term and find out more about it. But here's what HP had to say about this themselves. A potential security vulnerability has been identified within certain HP printers. This vulnerability could be exploited to execute arbitrary code. So that simply means that the hacker can do virtually anything. Now, the good news is HP has fixed this problem, and they have included it in an update that was pushed to any computer, any printer rather, which was set to automatically download firmware updates from HP when they're available. But again, the problem with many of these products is that they are not set to automatically download. So here's exactly how you fix that. If you own an HP computer, again, this is a hair on fire 5 out of 5. Stop what you're doing and listen to these steps. It's actually pretty simple. So if you have a Windows machine, Windows 10 is automatic. So Windows removed the ability for you to disable automatic updates. So if you have a Windows machine, your HP printer should be fine. If you've got Windows 8, here's what you do. Press the Window and the Q key at the same time, and that'll bring up a search field. And in that search field, type HP update. And then you'll get HP update on your list of results. Click on that and you've opened up your HP update. Again, it's a little bit different in Windows 7. And if you're still running Windows XP, it's a little bit different. Just take a look in the show notes at DIY Cyber Guy and we'll take you through those step by step. But that first step is you have to open up your HP update window that HP has running in your Windows machine if you are using an HP printer. So once you've got that HP update window open, click Settings, and in the web section, you'll find a question that says, check for security updates. You can select every or never. I strongly recommend you select every, and then there's a drop-down menu next to that. You can select whatever frequency you want. 1 week is probably fine. You can select one of the other frequencies if you like. And then just click OK to save your settings. And if you're not sure, if you don't have one of the systems that I mentioned, just Google the term HP update and then the exact name of your computer, and you should be able to get the exact step-by-step instructions. Or, like I said, go to the show notes at DIY Cyber Guy, and I'll tell you all about it. So again, hair on fire, 5 out of 5. Check your printer. If you have an HP printer, you have to run this. A remote code, arbitrary code execution is as bad as it gets. HP is on top of it, but you've got to run the updates. And I strongly recommend that you make sure those updates run automatically with whatever frequency you are comfortable with. Okay, next story. This one's a lot of fun. It's a hair on fire, only 1 out of 5. So it's something you should know about. It has to do with vape sticks. If you happen to be a vape stick user, you're somebody that likes to vape. Whatever you're putting in the vape stick is really not the issue here. The issue is that vape sticks can be used to spread malware, believe it or not. So the simple fix is don't charge your vape stick on the USB port of your computer. Use an outlet. Use a power outlet to plug in your USB cord. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it because this one kind of falls into the category of hysterical hack. I think the hackers were getting a little bit clever with this new technology because they know that people with vape sticks need to recharge them, and often the USB port on your computer is the easiest way to do that. So security researchers actually demonstrated how an e-cigarette or a vape stick can be easily modified into tools that hack computers. So here's a report from Sky News, exactly what they had to say when they covered the story. So with minor modifications, the vape pen can be used by attackers to compromise the computers they're connected to, even if it seems like they're just charging. Giving a presentation at B-Sides London, Ross Bevington showed how an e-cigarette could be used to attack a computer by fooling the computer to believe it was a keyboard or by tampering with its network traffic. Again, that's pretty bad. If you can convince a computer that you are a keyboard, then the computer is going to let you load drivers and other computer programs that are typically included with a keyboard or a mouse, making it easy to install malware in that computer. The article continues, while Mr. Bevington's particular form of attack required the victim's machine to be unlocked, that was not the case for all attacks. So it's not enough to just lock your computer when you walk away from it, although that is going to mitigate some of the attacks using a vape pen. Another hacker and researcher known as 4Rockets published a proof of concept video which showed arbitrary commands being entered into an unlocked laptop just after plugging a vape pen into the computer to charge, which is about the easiest thing you can do. If somebody's even walking around your office with a vape pen, hopefully that's not a totally common sight in your office. But if they do, it only takes seconds for them to plug in that vape pen into your computer or your laptop, and then you've got an issue. So 4Rockets showed Sky News how using less than 20 lines of code, That's not a lot, folks. 20 lines of code is very minimal. The computer could be made to download an arbitrary and potentially dangerous file to run on it. All right, so here's where the attack is getting even more interesting. All these 20 lines of code does to the computer is to tell the computer to go download something else that it probably should not want to have on itself, like malware. So this is going to put some limitations on it, according to the article. It puts limitations on how elaborate the attack could possibly be. For example, the WannaCry malware was about 4 to 5 megabytes, which is hundreds of times larger than the space in an e-cigarette. So the idea of the e-cigarette or the vape stick actually being able to just deliver 20 lines of code that could be made to pull in even more code, up to 4 to 5 megabytes worth of code, which is what something like ransomware or even the WannaCry malware would require, then that becomes very, very possible, even though the memory of a vape stick is extremely small. So a couple of ways to protect it. Again, the most important way is don't charge your vape stick on your computer. Don't charge any kind of e-cigarette using the USB port on your computer. Extremely bad idea, extremely bad policy. You should have a good password to your laptop. When you walk away from it, make sure that you're locking your computer up with the password. Make sure that it defaults automatically to a screensaver and will turn offline so nobody can hack it while you're walking away from it. But again, that's not going to mitigate all the possible attacks here. It'll just mitigate some of them. So make sure your computer is in your possession. This may be inconvenient, especially if you work in an office, but make sure that nobody has physical access to your computer, because using a vape pen, or more realistically, a USB stick, is probably going to be used more commonly in an attack like this. But if a person can touch your computer, it only takes seconds for them to use a vape stick, a USB drive, or any other similar type of device to infect your machine. Okay, we'll be right back with some more tips and suggestions from DIY Cyber Guy.
Anchor ID is a new way to log into websites and mobile apps, all without a password. The key is your smartphone, literally. Your smartphone is the key that will replace the need for passwords to your online sites. Our next product will be available to Salesforce.com users soon. To sign up for the first year free, just go to anchorid.com/Salesforce. Visit anchorid.com/Salesforce and get your first year free. You are listening to DIY Cyber Guy with David W. Schroefer. If you have a question for David, please send it to questions@DIYCyberGuy.com. That's questions@DIYCyberGuy.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back for our last segment of DIY Cyber Guy. We had a number of questions this week, and I am happy that we've got a little time so we can get to some of them. Our first question is from Michelle from Utah. Her question is, why is my computer running slowly, really slowly, in the last few weeks? Is it just me? Nope. There are a lot of people that are running into the same issue since January 1st of this year. And the issue is this Spectre problem, specifically Spectre variant 2 that I talked about earlier in this episode. Essentially, to get rid of the problem of Spectre and also Meltdown, which is a related type of vulnerability, not an attack. People aren't using this to attack yet, just a vulnerability. You have to prevent the chip from cheating. And the reason that the chip cheats is to make it work faster by getting ahead of itself, like I've talked about in this episode already. So by making the chip run more slowly, you can actually experience slowdown from a lot of different performance levels, whether you're opening up a new program and that program, like Microsoft Word, takes a little while to load up, or even your browser takes a little while to load up. That really could be the issue. Some of these mitigations that have been put in place on every computer, Apple, Dell computers, all different manufacturers of computers, have initiated some sort of fix between January 1st of this year and today. Even Google implemented a fix without telling anybody in the third quarter of last year. And thankfully, because of how they implemented the fix, most people are noticing much of a slowdown if you're working online on Google Docs. Now, there are a host of other issues that you might be experiencing that's making your computer run more slowly. You could have some other kind of virus or other kind of malware running on your computer. It's also very possible that you're experiencing cryptojacking. Cryptojacking is when your processor is borrowed, for lack of a better term, by some script that is mining Bitcoin or mining some other kind of cryptocurrency for somebody else. Now, there's been a lot of activity in this area in the last few weeks, and it's not doing anybody any favors except for the people that are putting it out there. So in prior episodes, I talked about companies like CoinHive that intentionally made API scripts to sell to companies that wanted to run it on your computer. And some companies were doing that without really letting you know. But the end result is that CoinHive itself has been blocked by almost every single ISP and every single DNS blocker, ad blockers. They're on the bad list. They're on the blacklist. So that becomes a less critical issue. But what we're finding, especially in the last 3 or 4 weeks, is that malware, you know, the stuff that gets on your computer without you knowing about it, it's intentionally trying to deceive you to get you either to install it or to visit a website that installs it in a way that it doesn't need your permission. It doesn't need you to click yes to anything. That type of malware is becoming a lot more prevalent. Why? Because it makes money. Electricity and computing power are the biggest barriers to mining any kind of cryptocurrency, including Bitcoin. So if you can get somebody else's computer, namely yours, to run the software for them, then they've got lots of computing power, free electricity, because you're paying for it, and they get to have the same result of being able to mine Bitcoin or cryptocurrency successfully. So put all that together, and that could actually be a pretty big problem. An easy way to see if that's a problem for you is either run antivirus software. I mentioned Sophos is one that I recommend in particular. If you've got a Windows machine, use Defender. It comes with Defender, and it can usually find these different types of malware if it's on your computer without your permission. If you are asked to download either CoinHive or download something that's called a cryptocurrency miner or anything like that at a website that you visit, just say no. Decline the offer. It will help support a legitimate website, but we're finding that it's really not being used by legitimate websites. It's rampantly being used by the same guys that brought you malware and, you know, what we used to call viruses and the types of things that spread over the internet automatically without you knowing about it and slow your computer down. So there are a few different reasons that could be happening. Any one of them is something that you really want to avoid, isolate, and get rid of. So, Michelle, thank you for your question. Adam from California asks, I use Microsoft Word every day. I freaked out last week when I could not open it. Yeah, that'd probably make me freak out too if I used it every day, and I do. I had to go into my application list on Windows and right-click the open field to get it to work. So I guess he had to manually start it from the application list. And I'm worried that I'm going to lose these Word files. What should I do? Okay, Adam, I'm not concerned that you're going to lose those Word files, but if you are, then you need to back them up. Either back up your entire directory, back up your file folder, back up these files. Hopefully, if you do it well, you'll have a redundant backup. You'll have two backups in two different sources, and make sure one of them is offsite. Make sure one of them is in, you know, either use an online service. And I'm going to have an episode because I've been getting a lot of questions about how to do a good backup, how to do it in a remote location. So if something happens to your physical location, all your files don't simply go away. But bottom line, this Microsoft Word problem is probably could be due to the Microsoft update that was issued on Tuesday, March 13th. As I mentioned earlier in this episode, there were a number of issues with that. One of them that I actually didn't mention in this episode was that double-clicking Microsoft Word wouldn't open it anymore on some Windows computers. Didn't happen every time, but it happened sometimes. So that could have happened your time. So when you say you freaked out when you couldn't open it, I'm going to guess, and you know, feel free to send the answer back at questions at DIY Cyber Guy like you did the first time, but I'm going to guess that you typically opened Microsoft Windows by double-clicking it somewhere on your home screen or somewhere in your dashboard. So if that's the case, that was either disabled or non-functional on some Windows machines after the March 13th update. That really could be what happened to you in this case. So back up the files if you're at all worried about losing them, but this may just be an issue with the Microsoft update. What I recommend in your case is run the next one that Microsoft puts out. Make sure you're, I don't always recommend that your updates are on automatic, especially lately with Microsoft, because they pushed a couple of updates that they had to roll back, including the last one. But in this case, I would make sure you run the next one because it's going to fix the last one. And hopefully the opening up Microsoft Word issue that I just described is going to be one of the issues that they fix. Okay, thank you, Adam. Eduardo from New Jersey asks, what's the difference between a VPN and Tor? Tor stands for the Onion Router. Since Tor is free, why doesn't everybody just use that? Okay, well, that's an interesting question. So, long answer to your question, what is the difference between a VPN and Tor? But I'll give you the basics. The idea is that you hide what you're doing on the internet. And the way that a VPN does that is a VPN has nodes or, you know, computers that are connected to the internet. And the idea is that when you are working through your VPN, everything you do on the internet doesn't just go to your internet service provider and get routed to the internet and go to the destination that you're looking for. Instead, it goes to your virtual private network or your VPN provider. And that provider will then take your question and repeat it from some other computer in its network. So you may be located like me in New York. And if you're using a VPN, you're probably going to go into one of your VPN's nodes in New York. Your VPN will send it to another node somewhere else, say California or Chicago or Miami or somewhere else. And then your traffic and all of the traffic from all of its other customers or many of its other customers will come out of that same node. So if you are trolling the internet looking for user behavior and user patterns, you can see that there's a VPN and it's got a, you know, set of computers connected to the internet and it's dumping a lot of traffic from a particular location. But the point is you can't tell which customer is sending any given piece of traffic. The VPN knows, and when it gets an answer back, so if you went to Amazon.com, for example, and that went through your VPN would know that it was you that made that request, and it would, once Amazon responded, it would send that page only to you, but nobody else on the internet, anybody looking at the traffic, anybody who's able to decrypt some of the traffic that's happening out there, which can happen, can't see that it's you making the request or you getting the answer. They can see that it's happening, but they can't tell that it's you personally or your IP address of your computer that's making that happen. Now, Tor is free, and by the way, I should mention that if you're using a free VPN, then you are the product. Everything I just mentioned costs money, and I've talked about this in previous episodes. So a VPN should charge you. They deserve to charge you because they're spending money on this bandwidth and on these different nodes. All this is not free stuff. So the fact that if a VPN isn't charging you, they're giving you a service for free, you should be suspect about that. And I'm going to do a show about VPNs and some mobile VPNs and other VPNs that I recommend in an upcoming episode. Tor is free because it was actually originally designed, you know, theoretically for spy networks. And it works similarly to a VPN, except it bounces, instead of just bouncing from one node to the next, it has multiple nodes all over the world. And it randomly will move your traffic from node to node to node. So it really doesn't collect your traffic in one node and basically dump it on the internet anywhere in the world. And it does that randomly. And the idea is that no matter how good your spying capabilities are on internet traffic, any information coming out or to or from any of these nodes is simply not traceable back to the person who originally put it out there. And if you want to know more about the Tor project, you actually go to torproject.org and not anything else. If you Google Tor, you're going to find all kinds of different things. Here's the downside to Tor, a few of them actually. One is, like I said, you can't control where it dumps off, where your traffic meets the internet. It could be a node in the Czech Republic. It could be a node in India. It could be a node in Canada. And that's going to, in a lot of cases, affect what you see. It could affect the language that your websites pop up in, because a lot of websites will look at different parts of the world and say, okay, if it's, you know, if I'm coming out in Brazil, I'm going to offer a language, you know, Brazilian Portuguese as my default language and not English, if that's what you happen to speak. And if you're listening to this show, you probably do. Also, you can't really stream. You're not going to stream large volumes of materials like, you know, especially like Netflix or other video channels. You can't stream that necessarily through Tor. And last but not least, anything you do on the deep web, any of the, you know, explicit illegal activity that you hear about on the dark web or the deep web, as they're commonly known, all that has to be done through Tor. A lot of these sites won't let you into the, you can't reach them any other way, excuse me, except for Tor, which is a problem. Because if you were to use Tor in your home and you've got children in your home, you've basically opened the door, the only door that allows them to get into some of these explicit and in a lot of cases illegal sites. So you don't want to do that. That's why I recommend a VPN over Tor, even though a good VPN will cost a little bit of money. For those reasons and several others, it's probably a better option for you than using the Tor network. That is all the time we have for today. Remember, you can download a free ebook. I'm giving away a full chapter of Digital Habits at diycyberguide.com/free. And send your questions, as always, to questions@diycyberguide.com. Keep them coming. I love answering these questions, and I will do that every chance I get. Remember that you have the ability to download the show on any podcast that you like. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Player.fm, Stitcher, Overcast, and Listen Notes. So if you use any of those podcatchers, just search DIYCyberGuy.com and you will find the show. You can also buy my book, Digital Habits, on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Just go to either one of those sites and search Digital Habits 5. So thanks for listening. And remember, to quote my recent guest, Dr. Myra Rose, cybersecurity is something you do, not something you buy. And I hope this episode helped you see how easy it is to do. So stay informed, be aware, and avoid the many traps on the internet by listening to DIY Cyber Guy every week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to DIY Cyber Guy. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this broadcast are for general information only, and we have not knowingly divulged any information that would conflict with any of our non-disclosure or confidentiality agreements. Please join your host, David W. Schroffer, next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Enjoy the internet. Safely.